think they're starting right now. It takes a second to get going. When you go live, I usually don't do the lives. They're kind of a pain in the ass, but. All right, we're live. All right. Back with Arvel. There's a lot going on in the media with you right now. You're kind of the head of Returned to the Land, which is a whites-only community, I believe. So, but you're being sued right now. But let's talk about your community real quick. Just tell me, like, real quick, how would you explain your community?
Sure. Yeah. And because we are under actually multiple lawsuits and multiple state and federal investigations, I already have to like qualify the language and clarify that we're not technically Return to the Land isn't a community. So Return to the Land is an association for people of European heritage who want to preserve that heritage through, you know, meetups, get-togethers, mm-hmm. events, which we host all over the country, actually all over the world. There's stuff going on in Europe. We have one member in Antarctica now, which is unbelievable. But then within Return to the Land, subsets of members can get together, pool resources, and buy land to form intentional communities. It's one of our values. We think going back to the land, back to traditional ways of life is going to be healthier.
Yeah.
We have all these problems with social isolation and mental health disorders and low fertility. And just, it's a laundry list of issues with modernity, not just the demographic issues. So yeah. We think just resetting and going back to how people used to do things is better in general, but Return to the Land doesn't centrally manage that. Return to the Land doesn't own any land. It doesn't sell any land. It doesn't directly manage this community here. We're just a bunch of Return to the Land members who yeah. pooled money, formed a company, and then that company owns the land that we all live on. So when a new member comes and wants to apply to this community, and by the way, we don't even accept all the Return to the Land members that apply to join this community. So just because you join the association doesn't mean necessarily that we'll invite you to live here in our first community.
Yeah, you want to be very careful who you have living around you because you're trying to build an actual community, it sounds like, which is very right. important. I agree. People yeah. don't have community. That's why depression, drug addiction, people are struggling. And also something about working on the land, being out like in that area. I went and visited Owen Benjamin. He has a farm. You know, it was just so beautiful being there, like doing like physical work, hanging out with him, his kids running around up in that whole area of Idaho. There's just so many, there was lots of white nationalists up there, I guess, but they were the nicest people. They invited me into their homes. I've been living in cities. I rarely get invited to people's homes. I was invited to 4 people's homes in like 3 days. It was like so bizarre to come in the homes, kids running around, family. You're like, wow, this is a beautiful area. And you could feel the community and how important that is. And if it's not 100% white there, I think some of those areas might have been white only, but it's like, why can't you choose who you can be with? I've kind of became friends with a black nationalist, weird as that may sound, and he doesn't like living around white people. He tells me he doesn't like many white people. We get along for whatever reason, but he's like, yeah, I don't like most white people. I don't want to be around them. Why should he have to be? He shouldn't.
Yeah, no, and most people really do feel that way. The average person of any race has some level of sympathy for their own and distrust of others. That's just human nature. So rather than trying to form laws and set rules that force us to try to overcome human nature constantly, let's just accept that's how people are and allow them to associate as they want. So freedom of association, we don't have an express like amendment or anything like that to the Constitution that gives us that right. It's derived typically from the First Amendment for free speech, assembly, and expression. And part of that freedom of expression has been construed very, very widely historically. And so we, at one level, are exercising our First Amendment right simply by choosing to live in a community like this. Now you ask, like, why would it be illegal, or why do they try to make it illegal for exclusive communities to exist? The rationale is basically this. One of the core functions of government is to secure access to markets for its citizens. In some cases, that was how a government came to be in the first place. Like the Kievan Rus that became Russia, that started with Swedish mercenaries who would protect market towns along the Volga. And then their protection of these particular places developed into a whole state. So it is a core function of government, but there's a difference between preserving access to public markets and then what private citizens are allowed to do in their own private lives. So private clubs today are still fully allowed to discriminate along racial, ethnic, religious lines. If you form a private club in the United States, you can invite whoever you want. The government has no say in how you're allowed to choose your members, right? What this lady, Michelle Walker, is suing us for, though, is on the grounds of laws like the Fair Housing Act, discrimination in real estate sales. Now, I already said, Return to the Land doesn't own real estate.
So there's no sales then. So how the suit makes no sense?
Good question. You know, it shouldn't make sense. But what they're going to try to argue is that because our community is affiliated with Return to the Land, and the only way to join our community is by joining Return to the Land first, even though it's just a private club, she'll say that I was applying in order to buy into your LLC. Now, the other problem, though, we have multiple layers here to protect us against things like this, because we saw this coming from the beginning. The other layer is that our LLC that owns the land doesn't itself sell land at all. We don't transact in deeds to real estate. We transact when a new member joins in shares of the corporation that owns the land. And then that share is associated with some part of the land that you have the right to homestead. You know, like, we would rather not mess with all of that and just be allowed to have our own land that we own and decide who's going to live next to us, like used to be the case. They used to have restrictive covenants, right? You would have a neighborhood that was like the German neighborhood, and all of the deeds to all the houses would have stipulations that when you sell the house, you have to sell it to another German American, right? And we had all these interesting ethnic neighborhoods around the country that developed their own character because of that. The Fair Housing Act did away with restrictive covenants so that when you sell land, you have to sell it on the open market to anyone whatsoever, right? So we're abiding by that. We're not trying to get around the law or screw the law.
You're following the law correctly, and they're suing you anyways. Can I ask what religion or ethnicity this woman is?
Well, she is ethnically Jewish, but... religiously, I think she's a Christian. She's married to a black man.
Ethnically Jewish. And does she want to come live with you, or she just wants to sue?
No.
I don't think she wants to go live out in Arkansas in the country and like do like work on the
on not the at all. She's one of the largest real estate brokers in the St. Louis area. So this is a wealthy Jewish woman who explicitly, according to her own complaint letter, has no intention of moving down here, never wanted to move down here. What she says happened is she was watching TV one day. She said this in the New York Times article they released the same day she filed the suit. So it's not just her acting alone. The NAACP is behind her. And apparently the New York Times, Wired Magazine, CNN, all these major media outlets were ready to go with the story. So you know what that means. This is a concerted effort to attack us. But she says that she was watching TV and a news report came on about Return to the Land. She heard of the land values that we got here. Apparently $1,000 an acre is her quote. We didn't buy this land for $1,000. You can't find that anywhere, right?
Yeah, I would go buy some land out there if I could get $1,000 acre.
Yeah.
Arkansas is actually beautiful.
It is beautiful. It's a great place. I mean, I identified it independently. Peter Seary, our secretary and kind of like the mastermind behind our legal framework, he identified this place independently. Another guy, Scott, who was a co-founder, had already moved to the area. A lot of people move to the Ozarks because it is beautiful. There are a lot of rivers, a lot of lakes. It's cheap. It's affordable. So she saw supposedly cheap land for sale through Return to the Land, which is not the case. She got on our website, filled out an application, and while she was applying, screenshotted all the questions about ancestry and her background and religious preferences and all of that. Screenshotted it, obviously, to be included in the lawsuit that she had planned from the beginning. But her damages that she's seeking are for emotional damage, emotional harm, supposedly. Like, she was really hurt
she's
by this. She's
distraught that she can't live in the land in Arkansas with a bunch of white people that she doesn't like.
She didn't even want to live there. According to her own admission, it was purely an investment, right? Which we don't allow, by the way. Like, you want to buy land just as an investment. BlackRock.
Yeah, BlackRock can come and buy them up then. Like, you can't have the right to live who you want. Like, I wouldn't want to live next to this lady anyways. Right before we started this conversation, I checked, and there are black-only and Jewish-only communities. I wonder why she didn't sue one of them.
Well, I mean, the double standard isn't really surprising. I mean, you can speculate about their motives, but the fact is, white Americans used to be the most powerful group in the country, and any rival group that wants to rise to the top is going to have to challenge the former most powerful group. And so whites in particular have been targeted with these civil rights laws, discrimination laws. And then at the same time, it is de facto legal to discriminate against us through programs like affirmative action, which is race-based discrimination, right?
Oh, it's
So.
true. And like even like the DEI, Trump said he was getting rid of it, but he got rid of it for everyone except for Jews, which are the most successful group already. So it's a little bit bizarre. You see these patterns, you're not supposed to notice them. So
Right.
let's say
Yeah.
I want someone with watching wanted to join. Like, what is your guys' process you go through?
Right. So what you're actually applying for is not to buy land here in Arkansas. What you're applying for is our private association. We're all around the world. We host meetups. Like I just went to Alabama for a meetup within RTTL to meet with some of our members there. And in that case, it was at a bar. Like we have meetups at parks. We have campouts here in Arkansas very often. And it's community building. So if that's what you're interested in, you can apply at returntotheland.org. You fill out an online application, talk about your background, your family's background, your values. If you were 100% English, Anglo-American, but you were a communist or like a hardline atheist, we still probably wouldn't accept you. We're a
Because
traditional values and European Heritage Association. So
you
if
don't
you're
want a trans
not
couple.
into traditional, say again.
So not like a trans couple or a gay couple.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we're not welcoming and we don't invite to apply gay couples, trans individuals. It's just not our thing. It's not the values of our association. So you can do that by applying and then you have an interview, we talk to you. And typically, yeah, we would prefer a video call so we can see who we're dealing with. We do get fraudulent applications and we have measures where, if someone applies fraudulently, where they're lying either about their racial ancestry or even their criminal background. We get a lot of people who say one thing and then it turns out they wouldn't have qualified. We, in
Will you take
principle, could
people
find
with
them.
criminal? Will you take
Say
people with
again?
criminal back? Will you take people with criminal backgrounds, or is that
It's a case by
depending on what
case
it
kind
is?
of thing. I mean, if it was severe, then no. Like we've had people, there was one guy early on who was very strongly white identitarian, had been for years. But like out of the last 10 years, he was in federal prison for 7 of those years for serious crimes. And he was like into construction. He had all this heavy equipment. At one level, I kind of wanted to accept him. But the goal here is we kind of have to reset society and we need to start from people with good values. I mean, at a certain level, like I have pro everyone has problems. Everyone has a rough background somewhere when you scrutinize closely enough. So you have to set the bar somewhere. There are
Exactly. We've
people like
all
with
done bad shit.
DUIs
We're
or
not perfect.
whatever. We forgive a lot of things and look past a lot of things because everyone has problems. But there definitely is a line. And like all the women especially who, for example, want to come live here in Arkansas, they don't feel comfortable with their kids being around people who were
That's a
either
very good point. You want the
sex
kids to be able to
offenders.
run around free. You have to be careful. And again, I've done bad stuff. You've probably done bad stuff. We're not perfect, but you have to look like, okay, how long ago were your crimes? How serious were your crimes? Do you regret them? That type of stuff.
Right. So it's a
I think that's
well-rounded thing. We're not just looking, is this person white or not? Right. It's a European ancestry association. It's also, you have to be pro-white. You have to affirm that ancestry. This lady says she identifies as white. I don't know what percentage Jewish she is, but even Ashkenazi Jews, who are the Jews with a history in Europe, are typically only one half European by ancestry. The other half is from the Levant, their place of origin, right? They're actually Asian. Jews are Asian. Not European. So they don't really fit into a European Heritage Association. But we look at a lot of things. It's heritage, it's values, it is obviously political ideology as well.
You're kind of rightish leaning, I would think. Obviously, you guys don't need to agree on everything, but you do need basic family values, tradition, like you're saying. You're going to get along better if that's what you're trying to build. And it is, to me, it seems great. Like, I mean, I probably wouldn't go live in Arkansas. It's probably a lot of work too, correct? Like, it's not as easy as people think, having to like work on the land.
Yeah, we've built everything from scratch ourselves here. There were no roads, no wells. We bought it from a logging company, so they had clear cut the front half of the property. All of the stumps were still there. It was totally overgrown with brush. So we cleared a lot of it by hand, some of it by machine, and I built basically my own building. I bought a building kit, so I kind of cheated, but still, like, it takes a lot of work.
I know someone that built one of those houses with a building kit, and it was like way more work than they thought. You know, and I've been around. I met you with Thomas Russo, a Patriot Front. I really liked him. He's constantly demonized. I don't think he's allowed a Twitter still, but he's like a really likable guy. He's built these mm-hmm. communities. I've met people's families, you know, their wives. Everyone says they're feds. It's like, well, I don't know. I'm hanging out with their kids, their wives. I think you were the other day. I came and taught a seminar, right? We did an interview and then did a seminar. Yeah, people had their wives and kids.
We actually got a chance. Yeah.
You were. Yeah. So it, I'm decent. I did that professionally for like 20 years. So I would hope so. But it's, no, but it was like really good. And I actually went the day before, got up at like 4 a.m. and spent an entire day doing hard manual labor for the flood victims. And it felt good to do that. I wouldn't have done that by myself, but they motivated me. I'm like, if they're doing it, there was maybe 30 of us out there, and you build this camaraderie that's hard to build nowadays in the world. And it's just, Thomas Russo has done a great job of doing that. I don't think he gets much credit for it.
No, yeah, people think of them as just activists, but Patriot Front is a lot more than that. It is, these men dedicate a large part of their lives to it. They're willing to drive all over the country. And yeah, their families get involved. You get to know people. And that's the same core issue that we're trying to address. Now, Patriot Front couldn't set up communities like we have because they are an activist group, right? And being an openly political group, that exposes you to certain risks. Now, even being an association that's apolitical and simply a private club intending to mind our own business, that also, it turns out, has some serious risks simply because we're white, which is ridiculous. But yeah, Patriot Front, I mean, I have met a lot of their members. I've met Thomas Russo multiple times. They're always willing to help out. They've come to the land here to help out at one of our events, actually two of our events. They volunteered, they helped with fencing. And it's like, how can you complain about that? And the people who say they're feds obviously have not met any of their members.
I saw in our news article bashing them, being like, it's like the white nationalists going, what do they call, helping hurricanes for propaganda. It's like, dude, we're out there working all day. They were out there multiple days. That was like hard work, and people were appreciative. That's not like for propaganda. Like, he really means it. And when he first came to Vegas, he brought like a dozen people with me. We spent like 12 hours together, and you can watch these small details and see if someone's truly respected and liked or not. You can't fake that. You know, most people can't have that many people following him around that like actually respect him. But Thomas, he understands that he has to get out there and do the work himself, that he can't go out there and like boss other people around. So like I said, I've been impressed with him. I haven't been to, you know, I'd love to someday maybe stop by. I don't have people over, but stop by and check out your land. Actually, I think you got a journalist at your place, right?
We've had many journalists out here. Yeah. Up front, when the story first kind of broke and we were getting attacked by mainstream media, we decided we better kind of tell our side of the story. So our strategy initially was to accept all sorts of different outlets. The big one was Sky News. They did like a 15-minute mini doc on us.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have a hard time because they want to pin us as like these white supremacists, neo-Nazis, whatever. But then they interview us. We sound reasonable. We just want to be left alone. And they're left thinking like, why is this wrong? But of course they'll try to slander. They'll try to come up with some attack angle, which is why eventually we decided, okay, that's enough media. We're going to go back to living a quiet private life.
Yeah. You don't want to overdo it where you constantly have media coming through if you're trying to be a community. But that's, I think I watched the Sky News one, which you actually did really well because they're kind of trying to slander you, but it just wasn't easy. So you came across looking good still. I've had CNN try to do hit pieces on me, but it's just like, okay, I pretty much always share my real opinion, so it makes it harder when you're just honest, truthful, never claim to be perfect. So it makes it harder for them to smear us, you know. This is your first lawsuit, correct? Because I remember when I talked to you before, you were setting up all this legal stuff, so they couldn't see. Oh, you have been sued before.
Yeah. We have, both are ongoing. The first one was kind of, it's frivolous, and our companies were associated for no good reason. Really, it has to do with Peter Seary, our secretary. He had a community in Ecuador. Back in the day, he was a fruititarian, so like a vegan that only ate fruit, and he had a community that he founded in Ecuador based just around that. So he used to facilitate land sales down there. And right before he left, there was a guy who he was helping out buy land down there. And because he was kind of the agent, the guy had given him money to buy land. And then he moved. And also the laws in Ecuador changed so that American citizens couldn't own land in that part of Ecuador. And so he told him, like, okay, you got to find someone else to do this because I'm not going to be able to help you. But the guy didn't do that and also didn't try to contact the sellers to get the money back. He's holding Peter accountable. And then for no good reason, he's including all of our companies, which have nothing to do with that. They were founded after all that happened in that lawsuit. That's insane. We think it was really under the guidance of one of these like leftist activists that have been harassing us from the beginning. Most of the trouble has probably been one guy in particular who posted initially a long thread on Reddit and posted it all over Reddit, trying to initially on the r/Jewish subreddit. So he's probably Jewish, but he tried to rile people up and get them to contact government, contact media, and they did. So this is when all the trouble started. This one Jew on Reddit tried to cause trouble for us.
I just get confused why the Jews are so against like white only land when there's all these Jewish only lands. Like I really get puzzled over it sometimes. Like it's just like
there
I knew it asked
30 soon. More than 30 intentional communities for Jews, Jewish only communities in the US. It's actually really normal. They have whole systems for it. Obviously they have a nation state in Israel and they're pro intentional community even in Israel with the kibbutz system. Right. Mm-hmm. Or the settlements. It's like they clear this land that formerly belonged to Palestinians and then they move in these explicitly and only Jewish settlements. Like they're doing it all over the world. They do it in other countries too. They have for millennia.
They have closed borders there. And then, you know, what's this whole, we're not going to get into a whole separate subject, but we see a lot of the open borders, the same people here, and they have closed borders there and they have Jewish only lands. They don't want white, tons of Jewish only schools. Nothing wrong with that. I have no problem with that. Live in other communities. I lived in San Francisco for a while. There's giant, you know, like Chinese communities and like Asian clubs where it's only Asian people, you know, and we walked in one time, it was all Asian. So I left. I'm like, okay, I'm not like, they weren't rude, but it was obviously wasn't a place for me. You know, when you see like 500 Asians and a white person, like, okay, I don't really belong here. So no one's kicking me out, but it's obvious that I just don't belong here. So I'm going to leave. It's like, they want to go to a place where they can all hang out amongst themselves. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, even in the cities, people usually segregate, you know, Chinatown, the black neighborhood, the Latino neighborhoods. It's like natural human nature. I think it is possible to get along with other people through things like military fighting. But that's not the norm. That's rare situations. As a whole, humans kind of naturally segregate. And there's nothing wrong with you guys wanting to do that. I think it's so weird you're targeted.
Yeah, it is. And by especially Jews, the lawsuit is from a Jewish lady. The previous lawsuit, we think, was being advised, or the plaintiff in that lawsuit was being advised by this Jewish guy. And then we're under investigation as well. Like the attorney general in Arkansas has been investigating us for more than a year. He's made public statements, though, or his office has, that they haven't found anything because we're not doing anything illegal. We're under federal investigation, too. And that costs a lot of money. It's like they're trying to harass us. A lot of the time, the process is the punishment. They're not suing you because...
I know that's a good point. The lawfare hurts you financially. Is there somewhere people can donate if anyone watching wants to donate? Because that is an excellent point. You'll probably win the lawsuits, but it's the time, the money. It costs a lot of money, and these people understand that. A lot of times it's really wealthy Jewish people suing to tear you apart because you can't, you know, they know you can't financially keep paying for the lawsuits.
Right. Yeah. No, we have a GiveSendGo. So givesendgo.com/RTTL-legal-fees. And before any of the lawsuits came out or the investigations, we had already pitched in to do legal research preemptively to improve our structure, to make sure it's airtight. Now, the next phase is going to be imposing costs on people who are doing this. Our side in general, a lot of us have been sued. We've been through the legal system, but we're not proactive. Like we don't have the pro-white ADL. It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And there's no reason we can't play the same game. So with our legal fund, the goal is eventually build up enough resources so that we can start countersuing these people. Mm-hmm. We can also start sponsoring positive legislation that will actually secure our right. There have been three bills passed, or actually, they didn't all pass. One passed in Texas, one was introduced in Arkansas, and one passed the House in Pennsylvania. essentially to ban organizations like Return to the Land preemptively. The Texas one, they acted like it was about Sharia compounds. Have you heard of this EPIC community in Texas?
I remember that when they're running that shit, that's how they're using that to ban white communities.
Yeah, they're acting like it's about Sharia law and Muslims, but within the bill that actually did pass, they have religious exemptions. Mm-hmm. So, and I actually I don't want to.
So those wouldn't even apply.
Huh?
So that wouldn't even apply then. The Muslim things wouldn't even apply to the bill.
It wouldn't. Yeah, and somehow I got to look at a letter from the DOJ addressed to them. I don't want to explain how, but they were like overwhelmingly friendly and saying, you know, sorry, we have to do this. But we got a similar letter from another government agency, and it was very, very harsh. They're giving kid gloves for the Muslims, kid gloves for the black communities, anyone else. But when it's us that does it, and this is the country founded by my ancestors, some of your ancestors, I'm sure, it's like when we do it, it is the worst evil, and we're treated like, you know, deplorable villains if we try.
Yeah, so, you know, it's been programmed in our head from like a young age. You know, I remember in school, all this like anti-white propaganda was pushed on us where we were like taught to hate ourselves, you know, and I don't consider myself racist. I have no hatred towards other races, but I like my own race and I was taught to hate it. You know, they wanted you to feel ashamed. And I think it's worked, the programming. People like, unfortunately, a lot of people go along with it. Off subject, but you mentioned earlier, like the white ADL, I think that's actually brilliant. We need to punish these people back. We need to go after them first. We need to stand, that's how they win. It's not in our DNA to want to like hurt people, go after them, but if they're playing that game, we need to play it back.
Exactly. It's our legal system too. It's been weaponized against us to keep us down, to discriminate against us, to do lawfare against us. We will take it back though. I think the direction of the movement, another kind of aside here, we need to get more procedural, technical, and really think about politics as it is our civic duty to make sure that those in power are held accountable.
Yeah.
And too much of our political engagement has been ideological. Like in the past, we used to debate, I don't know, national socialism against libertarianism, against like Bolshevism or something. Like there are those characters who are very, very ideological and they think that's what it's all about. But like before all of that, that's a positive policy prescription, how you think the country ought to be. Before that, your real duty as an American is to make sure that your representatives are doing their job and we're not systematically holding them accountable in legal terms. And then as like citizen journalists as well, you're seeing that more now as technology allows for it. But we really need to get out ahead and start funding our own media operations, not just to cover the typical kind of drama cycle that is very lucrative and the typical news cycle, but to do investigative journalism into the people that are actually making decisions, into the people that, like this Jewish lady, like the NAACP, are harassing and targeting innocent, law-abiding Americans. And, you know, it's a different attitude. Over the last, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, maybe it's a maturity thing, maybe it's having kids and seeing them grow up, but like what I thought politics was in the past versus now is very, very different. Now I feel much more of a sense of duty. It's like, if I don't get engaged, then I am letting my kids down. I'm letting my country down. In the past, I thought like, well, what business do I have getting involved in politics? I'll talk about political theory, I guess. I'm interested in that. But I didn't have that sense of duty. And I think not enough of us were raised with that sense of duty. The military instills it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know. But not on a legal side.
No, I think you're right. Once you have kids, you realize you have a duty to do more. And there's a political arena, but you guys are kind of going a different arena as well of building your own communities. You know, same with Patriot Front. He's building community. Starting at the individual, you know, because unfortunately the government doesn't seem like they're going to do much for us. So we have to start doing stuff for ourselves. And I think, you know, the first thing is you take care of yourself, make sure you're healthy, then your family, and then you want to and start building communities and helping each other. Like, you can like help people do stuff. And that was what I realized with like Thomas, like, oh, we're going out to help people that got flooded because there's not enough government workers doing it. Like, you can actually give back to your own community. And that was try to vilify, you know? And I feel like you guys, you're building a community. How big is it, by the way? It's fairly small, right? It's not like it's some massive city. It's just a little community you guys have.
No, yeah, like approximately 40 people live here on the land, and then others have bought houses nearby. And it's not just about intentional communities for us. It is community building. And we really strongly support that model as well, where you have some kind of home base, a community center, or some center of activity that everyone has a stake in. They feel like they have skin in the game. They get involved. They can work on it. They can see it improve over time. That's really important. But then, okay, own land nearby. No one can shut that down, right? I went and visited a Christian identity church. You're probably familiar with Christian identity, right?
A little bit.
Yeah.
Not super well.
So these people basically believe it's like the Black Hebrew Israelites, but for white people. They say that Europeans are descended from the 10 lost tribes of Israel. It's not my belief, you know, it's, but whatever. Yep. I mean,
I don't know why everyone wants to be them, but.
But there's this community in Missouri, and they have 20 acres with their church building, a kid's playground, like accommodations for people coming from out of town for their festivals and stuff. And then everybody owns land right around there, and they sell to other members. And that's, they've been there for 80 years, openly pro-white, a white-only community. They've had like Black people come try to check out the church, and they just politely tell them, like, I'm sorry, this isn't for you. You know, this is an exclusive community. And it works, you know, regardless of what happens with this lawsuit. I think the private sector options for strengthening your own community, your own people, are really unlimited, right? It's just how creative do you want to get with it? What kinds of services can we offer each other? You know, in RTTL, there are doctors, dentists, massage therapists, people who offer services that could benefit all of our members, right? So we're actually transitioning from just a private club to a nonprofit structure, a fraternal benefit society. And that legally, you can also be exclusive in those structures. There are like exclusive Ukrainian and Norwegian and other ethnic fraternities, but you're allowed to offer insurance. You're even allowed to have relationships with credit unions. So you can have like your own credit union that is just for your group. And so we're exploring all of that. It takes a lot of time. There are other groups that we're working with, but like, we really haven't scratched the surface as far as how we can organize to directly benefit each other. It's not just political or ideological. It is, how can you lift each other up? So
no, that's huge. That's absolutely huge, of helping each other. And we've gone away from that. Like, it's bad. Like I mentioned earlier, living in San Francisco, I was tied into some like really large Chinese communities and Afghan communities, and they do help each other. They're always helping each other. They're getting discounts, getting things for free, helping each other through everything. And that's what I noticed. They didn't have any hatred towards me. I mean, maybe because I was a fighter, I was treated a little better than a lot of people, but I noticed they always put themselves first. And that was like, that was kind of eye opening, being like, white people never ever get a discount because we're white. Help someone out because they're white. There's nothing wrong with doing things to help each other out. And especially if it's good, upstanding, you know, members too. You don't want to help out losers, because we will call our own. I think white people are pretty good at calling out, you know, the bad apples. Some of the other races aren't as good as that.
Actually, sometimes some innocent apples get thrown in there. Yeah, we factionalize constantly, and someone will come up with a really nice framework. And then someone will kind of look at it, evaluate it, and think, yeah, but it's not exactly this thing that I had in mind. And we're all thinkers. You know, all of us have these brilliant ideas, and we have a lot of very high IQ, creative, interesting folks in the movement broadly. But it is like herding cats. And like, when I saw Peter's solution for how we can form community, it's not what I had in mind. Like I said, Peter Searer, our secretary, he came up with the actual legal structure of RTTL for the most part. I mean, I contributed. I don't want to say I did nothing, but like, when I saw the initial document that he sent to us, it was totally different than what I had in mind. I wanted to do something more informal. actually more based on education. I still think education is very important, but like it was, I was idealistic. I wasn't really thinking in terms of what are the laws in place? What are our rights? How do we expand on our rights? So as soon as I saw it, I read through it, I thought critically about it, analyzed it. And then I was like, you know what? He's right. And we have to do this. And, you know, other organizations too, it's like, do you have to create your own thing? Or if you want to do activism, maybe Patriot Front has actually figured out how to do it pretty well. And you can just,
you don't have to start someone new. Exactly. You could join that, or I mean, you can start something new, but you don't have to, if someone already has a good foundation, knows what they're doing, and you got to be adaptive. Like you said, the guy sent you something that you didn't have in mind, but you looked at it and was like, okay, this is probably better than what I had. So you adapt and go with it. You know, something else I liked about you, I forget what it even was, some stupid scandal. And you're like, I'll step down if someone's better than me. If someone wants a position, you're willing to, like, it's not just about you. You don't make it all about you. You're willing to step down. I do feel like our communities like attack each other too much. Like always the smallest thing of virtual signaling, when none of us are perfect, and like the smallest things, you have people trying to totally like shame someone and oust them from a movement.
Right. Yeah. A lot of that has to do with the structure of our discourse, which is really just determined by the structure of social media. And what thrives on social media is a cult of personality. It is personal attacks. It is drama. It's not like building a sound legal framework and then organizing according to it. There are things that we can do to make viral content out of, say, this Return to the Land community here. But I mean, it's just, that's not what it's for. That's not what its purpose is. And social media, it's a spectator sport. It is who's getting these huge numbers. And then it's virtue spiraling or signaling as well, where like, when you have a discourse with a certain set of ideas, if you get a little bit more radical over time, you get that bulk of your audience to go with you. And if you're the guy who's a little bit more extreme and people are tired of hearing the same thing, then they go with that slightly more exotic, extreme guy. And so we've seen this, and we've seen like the left and the right totally isolated because of that. There's no interchange. I don't know if you've seen these graphs of like social media communication, but like right wing X and left wing X have no crossover. There is hardly any communication. Totally separate networks. And it's really a shame because like now how I think of like politics at a national level increasingly is people like Thomas Massey have to get in there, not with a strong ideological agenda where he's saying this is what the country has to look like and I'm going to make it happen. It's accountability. Like, again, that civic duty to hold our representatives accountable, to put criminals, elite criminals in jail, stuff like that. Like, that's what matters. Making sure we're following our own laws. The government is following its own laws and obeying its own budgets and not hiding funds and missing funds and losing our money and all of this stuff. It's like people like Massey are attractive to the left. People like Trump are ideological. They say, here's my vision for America. I'm going to enforce it. And then people on the left just reciprocate that in their own direction. And I feel like people will get tired of it. They're going to become jaded by this overly ideological way of thinking about politics. And some kind of coalition just has to happen based on, we need to clean up this system. You can't fix a system that is overbloated and they're missing our, like they lose our money. They, like the Defense Department lost $8 billion not that long ago.
Wasn't it $2.3 trillion before 9/11? I think Donald Rumsfeld said like $2.3 million was unaccounted for and counting. Then the next day a plane crashed into the counting office, the Pentagon. Yeah. It's like, you can't make this stuff up. But look it up, people. Right. It's true. It's something that sounds ridiculous when I first heard it. Then you look it up and you're like, oh, wait, that actually happened. And it says, what do you make of Massey? The amount of money they put, $35 million, three Jewish billionaires pumped in to get him to, this is a small district in Kentucky, and you have Israel and Jewish billionaires that are tied to the IDF. It's not just random Jews. These are like billionaire Jews. All of them got their money from terrible ways. You know, I think one was gambling. One was buying like debt from countries. The other one was like foreclosures in the 2008 financial collapse. So these got their money through the worst ways. And this is who's funding this race. It's like, I don't know what to make of that. I mean, I do.
Well, I think what it really says, A, it says that we don't control our own country if we are that open to our elections being bought. Mm-hmm. Well, there aren't firm rules against foreign lobbies having a role in our elections. And as long as that's the case, there's more money abroad. There's more money in the international Jewish community than in any local congressional district that's going to vote on their own behalf. So it can't be Kentucky's fourth that gets its will if it's about the money. And unfortunately, it really is. The other thing, though, that it says is that what they're afraid of isn't ideology, because Massey's ideology is kind of harmless. He's like a milquetoast, libertarian-leaning conservative. What he did was find a procedure. He passed a bill, and now it's law that they have to disclose the Epstein files. Mm-hmm. So he learned how to use the tools of government to hold powerful people accountable, and that's what they're afraid of. So, like, or what you mentioned about the $2 trillion, it's like people don't believe these things. The good thing about the internet is that this information has been filtering out there to more and more people over time. But still, like, the again, the structure of social media incentivizes people like looks maxing and people posting about drama. It does not really incentivize responsible citizen journalism that is holding powerful people accountable. So it's a technical problem. Like, Massey saw, as an engineer, government and the abuse and the corruption, and he found a technical solution, not an ideological solution. That's what they're afraid of. And so I would say, look at that and lean into it. If they're willing to spend $30 million in this little, you know, country district in Kentucky, then that's how afraid they are of us actually organizing on the basis of holding them accountable. It is us versus them. It's not Democrats versus Republicans or whatever. Bingo. It is like,
I think you nailed it with that.
Pedophile billionaires who are like stealing our money and doing a lot worse things, actually, they are the common enemy, not just even of Americans, but mankind. So, like, as we go forward and how are we going to politically organize, we have to think of smart technical solutions to incentivize journalism, the right kind of journalism, and to navigate our legal system. Again, the pro-white ADL, but also just legal funds that are intended to cut down this whole
We need to help each other out more. And, you know, even $5, $10 can help to these things. Like, it doesn't take a lot.
Exactly.
Back to Massey, I think they wanted to punish him for releasing the Epstein files. They wanted to make an example of him. And they still haven't released half of them. It was crazy. It's law they have to, and they won't do it. Instead, they got him removed. So it can be a little frustrating, but it does show, like, all the young people voted for Massey, at least.
Right. But no one's really been doing this. Massey is the first congressman that I can remember that tried something bold like this and worked across the aisle to accomplish it against the will of his own party leadership. It's like that kind of principled stand. And you just look at the guy, he does look like an American. He has the American founding phenotype. Like, he is, he's the Constitution personified. Yeah. And I don't think it's unique to Massey. It's like, Massey's not the only guy that can do this. But we are seeing a rise in authenticity. Like, in the past, journalism was all talking points and curated, and it was PR people thinking carefully about how they tell these stories. And now it's people like yourself. It's people just telling what they see, what they think about the world.
Yeah. I wasn't trying to get media. I wasn't trying to get in media. I was just disappointed with all of the podcasts and stuff out there. So I'm like, I could bitch about something, or I could like do my own thing. You know, sometimes you got to go out there and be the change you want. And guys like Dan Bilzerian, a good friend of mine, obviously he's controversial, but he's already rich and famous. He doesn't want to be in politics, but he's like, hey, I got to go out and try to do something.
Right.
You know, that's going to be an interesting race.
It's that sense of duty. Like, I talked to Dan and I was really impressed by the fact that he has nothing to gain from doing this at all.
Exactly.
Right. He's had all the fun he could have wanted and all the fame and all the wealth. And now he wants to actually make a difference in his country. And I think there's a hunger for sincerity. There's a hunger for a sense of duty and responsibility, and it will transcend parties. And I don't know exactly what it's going to shake out as, but Massey is going to be part of it. People like Dan Bilzerian will be part of it. And I'm really curious to see how it unfolds. Although I say that, like, I can't just be passively curious. I have to get engaged and make sure that we shape the right kind of movement mm-hmm. that can actually work. And, you know, I am a right wing guy, but so that we can work with responsible left wing people
yeah.
also to clean up this mess. Again, it's not yeah. left versus right. It's them, the elite that are ruining our country. And like, even just the financial system, it's so frustrating. Like they siphon off our wealth with every transaction. And then on top of that, not only they're printing money and depreciating our currency, but then the insult of the income tax and property tax, it's just too much. It's
I agree, because they're printing mm-hmm. money, so the money's inflation's going up, but they're also taxing you, plus like you said, property tax, sales tax, it's on every level. I think in the what was the tea result, the tea revolt, it was a couple percent tax they tried putting on tea, and that, you know, right. they had a revolution, and now we have, like, you know, some states it can be up to 50%, and then in California it's almost 50% if you're making a lot of money, because the I think it is like 50% because the state tax is so high, the property mm-hmm. tax, the inflation, it's just absurd. And they don't care. It's almost people at the top, they don't even care if they're destroying the country, because they own assets, stock market manipulation, the insider trading. It's mm-hmm. like, so that's how they're getting rich. And I think it is important to say, hey, I lean right, but we don't want to look at people on the left as my enemy. Now, if they're trying to turn my son into a girl, then yeah, he's my enemy. That's clearly my enemy. Right. But like, most people on the left are not my enemy. They're just like, have maybe slightly different ways of thinking at things. And we can sit and have conversations and try to understand each other instead of being like, this is our enemy. The people at the top, they're sucking us dry, manipulating us, you know, all these stock market. I mean, Trump's really bad at it. I was a Trump supporter the first election, but people don't want to admit all this fraud he's doing. It's just insane. You know, the war with Iran, the fraud, the Epstein files. He's done the exact opposite of everything he's ran on. So if you were a Trump supporter before and you still are, obviously you have no morals. Now, the never Trumpers that are Trump supporters, I understand that. The Ben Shapiro's, the Mark Levin's, that makes sense, you know, because the Israel First, the Mark Zuckerberg's. But I feel bad for the regular MAGA people. I mean, I think they almost feel like they're too invested. They can't admit they were fooled.
Yeah, I mean, mostly it's boomers. It's people who are 65 and older who are watching Fox News constantly and just absorbing the propaganda, which, again, testifies to the structure of media determines outcomes. So the way that social media, it's so important that Elon Musk bought X. You know, it's still not perfect. And I feel like it's improved rather than gotten worse. That's just me. Maybe like your feed is different than mine, but like technical solutions to getting the right information out to the right voters and the right people, that's really more important than having the perfect ideology. And I basically segregate my politics now down the middle, where there is the national discourse and what our government is doing and the structure of social media and what a mass movement could be and what could be effective. And I'm very flexible. Oh no, I always do this. I have this like
AI
controlled camera, and I gesture a lot and then it zooms in on me. There we go.
Okay. At least you got it out with your hand again.
That's happened too many times. But then on the other hand, there is, what am I doing to build up my community? Just like historically, Jews have had this same kind of relationship with their host countries, right? They try to have some kind of influence over the national policies when they were in Britain, when they were in Spain, wherever they were, right? And sometimes to the detriment of their host nation, in fact. But then also, meanwhile, they have their own communities. They have their own synagogues. They have their own culture. And they focus most of their time and resources on building that up. And the reason for their political power, their outsized impact on national politics, is they have this intense sense of solidarity, and all of them contribute to their causes. Yes, there are Jewish billionaires who are in finance or benefiting from a corrupt financial system, banking system, et cetera. You can excuse it in any way you want, but the average Jew is actually an average person. They're not some wealthy millionaire or billionaire. They have more money than other ethnic groups on average, but like, they are powerful because all of them contribute and participate in identity building. They build that sense of common culture. They all read the same texts. Some of them are secular, but even then, they still go to Shabbat dinners.
Ethnicity,
exactly. No,
it is really impressive. like how many organizations they have, like dozens, how they work together so well. They'll disagree on some things, but when it comes to Israel, they almost always jump back together and unite on that. Even like the leftist ones that were anti-Israel are kind of changing their positions a little bit. Like it was right. Norman Finkenstein was bashing like Tucker Carlson and stuff yesterday over his anti-Semitism. I saw Dave Smith, who unfortunately I've been friends with this guy for like 10 years because he was a big fight fan. I've been on his podcast before I was into politics, but him and Dan, you know, Dan wanted to just have a conversation with him. He didn't want to. And then he's like bashing Dan. When Dan's running against Randy Fine, like, it's fine if you don't like Dan, but he could be like, I don't like Dan, but he's better than Randy Fine. But Dave's not even saying that. And then I found Dan showed me clips of him saying like, oh, Israel's just a vassal state of America. So you're like, wow, like even the ones that are on our side still go back to defending Israel.
Yeah. But then at the same time, there are like anti-Zionist Orthodox Jews who actually do just want to have their own communities and mind their own business. Mm-hmm. I like that. I've talked to Jews like that. You know, I don't want to just paint with a broad brush and say it's literally all of them. Yeah, it is strange, though, like how willing they are to interfere in other cultures' affairs and how comfortable they are being disruptive to other cultures. Like, white Americans especially, and just white people around the world, our sense of identity has been attacked. And I think there are serious psychological consequences for that. Kids do grow up with a sense of self-hatred. They question their identity in gender terms as well, probably because they, like, they're unhappy in their own skin because they hate their race.
Adolescence is when it's pushed on them, because it's my oldest daughter went to school in Marin by San Francisco, and it was lots of the girls they would get. People think it's boys, but it's these girls. They go through puberty. Yeah. They're struggling. A lot of times the girls that aren't the prettiest are having a hard time, and the teachers treat them better if they switch to trans. Now, most of them will switch back to be normal again, but some of them don't. And it's hopefully that's passing, but it was really bad when my daughter was there.
Right. Yeah. My point is that white people have had our identities attacked. We're obviously suffering. The suicide rates in white men especially are extremely high. Drug abuse is extremely high. We have serious problems in the white community, but we can't even think in terms of a white community. It's essentially forbidden. And Jewish groups and Jewish-backed groups, like the NAACP was founded by Jews and others. Obviously, the ADL, they've put out negative statements about us, condemning us. They're a Jewish organization. The SPLC, same thing. It's like all these Jewish-backed groups and Jewish individuals feel comfortable attacking any attempt for building white solidarity. And it makes you think, I mean, the cynical interpretation is this is a group strategy thing. They know that nepotism and a strong sense of solidarity with their people is their strength. And they don't want us to have it. They want us to be atomized individuals and for them to have this super strong identity. And it's obviously wrong. And I suspect is what's happening, but not all Jews necessarily want to contribute to that. I think.
But too many. Well, that's crazy. The ADL, they're a Jewish only organization, or maybe they let some non-Jews in it, but they're clearly funded for Jews. They're attacking you for being with whites. That makes no sense. Like, how can they rationalize that? There's no way to do that, but they want the groups weak. That's the only thing I could think of. And they help train the FBI is what's scary. They've been caught like spying on American citizens and sending the information to Israel. This is an anti-American, anti-white hate group. I mean, they're very clear about it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole civil rights era redefining the American identity is anti-American, anti-white. The problem for them is our history and identity as a whole. And now we have to think of America as a country of ideas and a land of opportunity. And it's a melting pot, et cetera. And it's like, I don't have that luxury in the same way that other ethnic groups do to just give up and surrender what my ancestors were, because my ancestors have been here for hundreds of years, most of them. My most recent ancestors are my father's line going back to Norway. They came over, I think, in the 1890s. So that's relatively recent in like my family tree, but we were here other branches in the revolution. It's like, I am an American. I have nothing else. Jewish Americans are Jews too. Right. So they're also something else.
They can go to Israel, take my identity. Yeah. They can always run and hop to Israel and instantly be granted citizenship. I have nowhere else to go. Do you have anywhere else to go? I don't have another passport. I have no other country that'll take me in. America exactly. falls, I'm screwed.
You know, exactly. So, yeah, I mean, it does look like it's intentional. It is intended to destroy their competition. And I think, like, we are in the right, morally speaking. I think most people can realize that. The left mm-hmm. is currently brainwashed, but the left kind of has woken up to what Israel itself as a state is doing. Not all of them understand, you know, Jewish influence and what it's done in this country. But that, again, there's a technical problem where their media, where their trusted sources aren't giving them the relevant information. On the right, we're distributing, you know, the red pills, right? Mm-hmm. And we can't think that the same tactics that worked on dispositional conservatives will work on dispositional liberals, because a lot of it's just hard-coded. Yeah. It's biological differences between left and right. It's testosterone levels, it's psychological metrics, like the degree of openness, etc. So, like, the problem is still there of converting this anti-Israel segment on the left into a segment that's more skeptical of this whole influence, which is the fundamental problem. Again, it's not all Jews necessarily, yeah. but when, like, I've had journalists, like, ask me, why are you so anti-Semitic in some of your posts? It's like, okay, listen, when Jews stop attacking me personally and stop attacking my organization, maybe I'll become less anti-Semitic. Yeah. But it's like, that is the reality that I personally have to live with. I'm harassed by Jews online. I'm sued by Jews. And it's like, okay, I'm not the only guy who's had this experience either.
I can relate.
So yeah, so it is an issue that I think the left could become more receptive to. And then once you get to that level, and it doesn't have to be framed as like Jews only. What it really is, yeah. is the ruling elite. Because white elite, Gentile
yeah. elites. Lots of them happen to be Jews. There's it's not just the yeah. Jews, you know, guys like Donald Trump, and they're part of it too, but they're tightly working with them and working for them, it almost feels like. But exactly. you are right with, like, you have talked to the left a little different, but they're a lot more receptive now. After seeing, you can look at like Palestine and see what they did and be okay, this is evil. Like my mom, she's kind of a leftist, you know. Some of the things I would say a few years ago, she would get like offended, but now she can see what they're doing and be like, okay, maybe you're right about some of the things you were saying. And like you said, I haven't been sued, but they've tried going after all my income, death threats. They try to destroy your life. Thankfully, they haven't been able to, but they try to. They're constantly trying to destroy everything I do. So this doesn't make you like them more. And this is when I first said some things like I didn't like they were doing in Palestine. I didn't say anything extreme, and they're still trying to ruin my life. People like Miss Rachel, she's like a kids program. I think she won anti-Semite of the year because she prayed with a Palestinian girl. It's just, it's outlandish. And I think yeah, people are like, fed up.
They're kind of incriminating themselves well enough. Like they have tarnished their own reputation in the 90s. You know, sentiments about Israel, Jews were so overwhelmingly positive. They dominated all of our media and we liked it. It's like I watched the Spielberg films, right? And it was fine. I liked E.T. I liked these movies. There were subversive messages. We didn't even recognize it.
Wouldn't even notice, you know, it, yeah.
But compare that state of affairs to where we are now. And again, the options are unlimited. It's really about how do you organize to get the right information to the right people. Relying on social media as it exists is not acceptable. Like there are people like Andrew Torba has Gab. That's an alternative media platform, yeah. right? Building alternative platforms is good, but then you get into ghettoization. And instead of like, there's a thin thread between left and right on X. Now it's like, it's only the right. And that's it. It's its own echo chamber.
There's like now, too much division on X too, unfortunately, too much infighting and stuff. So that gets a little right. tiresome.
Yeah, it is very tiresome. So we have to come up with new solutions to the media question and how you incentivize the right kind of content that gives the right kind of information to the right people. And you don't do that alone. I'm talking to people right now who are building systems like this using crypto technology, using like it takes a hive mind, though. It takes a whole group of people to be able to see all of these options before us, right? Group intelligence is greater than individual intelligence.
Yes.
And especially with the technological landscape as it exists, with job security the way it is too, there are so many reasons why it's important that you personally get involved. And I don't mean you, Jake, but like you, the listener, yeah. get involved with organizations that are like-minded so that you can build these necessary political solutions, mm-hmm. whether that's even things as simple as an app, let's say, that informs you of all the deadlines and gives you notifications when you have to register to vote, or gives inside information on all the candidates who are up for election. It's like technological solutions we can build to give people the information that they need and that they actually want too. It's like the problem with AI and social media as it exists is there's too much information and not enough of a filter of the good stuff. And the filter ends up being your algorithm, which just reinforces your ideological perspective, but doesn't actually inform you and help you to be responsible as a citizen and clean up government, which we all have to do.
Yeah.
So to come up with those solutions, first, join organizations where you'll find people you can bounce ideas off of. And, you know, more than likely, you yourself aren't the guy who's going to build that key technology or develop that tactic that's going to go all the way, but you can support the guy that is going to do that. And even just moral support. Like, I've known so many like lone geniuses that their work is really impressive, but it will never go anywhere because they have no social validation. They have no support network because they're not social people. Yeah. You know, the genius mentality is like, you're very high IQ and you're very disagreeable. You're not going to be off put by whatever, condemnation you get from the mainstream. Geniuses come up with radical new things. So they have to be willing to put up with people not liking them. And that's actually what you get. These genius personality types, they don't care about being liked. They just want to solve problems. So you have to connect the people who are fit to solve these problems with the rest of society. And we have to be more like, we have to do outreach to build community in a proactive way. Return to the Land is one part of that. And, you know, there's no reason you couldn't consider joining groups like Return to the Land and Patriot Front to start doing that. We need bigger organizations as well, like the White ADL thing or the pro-white ADL. I've worked with others on projects like that, and they've fallen through multiple times. It's getting to the point where I'm thinking like, okay, if no one else is going to successfully launch this, I'm just going to have to organize it and do it myself, but not on my own. Like, I couldn't do this on my own.
No, there's
I
no
have
way.
A bunch of people.
Let me know if you do. I mean, that's something I would, obviously, there's only so much I could do, but could try to help in some way. Like I said, we all need to come together and find little ways to help. I know most of us are busy in our lives, have a lot going on, limited amounts of money, but even like small amounts of money or small amounts of time, it all helps when there's enough of us. And, you know, we can't be getting people with suicide rates, drug addiction, like you said earlier, you know, the Oxycontin they flooded the people with. People have no community, they're depressed. I think community might be the single most important thing to build. And then once you build that, then you can start building solutions for like how to run for office, you know, how did the ADL, this type of stuff. And I think that's for me, a few years ago, I'm like, okay, I need to start a platform to spread the message and get my ideology out. Now I feel like my ideology is largely out there. I'm still going to keep the program probably for a while, but it feels less important now. I feel like I need to start moving towards more steps. You know, 3-4 years ago, it did feel important to try to spread my ideology. Now it feels less important. Now it's like, okay, how do we go against people that are so organized, know what they're doing? And that's kind of the steps we're in now.
Yeah. To transcend one game and start playing a more relevant new game, it takes like, you really have to have foresight. You have to have a lot of agency, which agency is just the ability to question what you're doing and why you're doing it on an ongoing basis. You can have very intelligent people who aren't that high in agency because they're not in the habit of routinely questioning, you know, am I doing the right thing here? Yeah. How could I improve this process? So what we're doing now en masse is we have this game, social media and followers on social media and putting out the right messages and seeing those messages spread. And it's an important one. It's one that was worth entering in the first place. You did, other people did successfully. Yeah. And we've largely won that game. Like the games that our ideas have made, it's really incredible. In my lifetime, like, I can't imagine. I get messages from old friends on Facebook.
It's crazy. I think things have changed so much. Like, I can't imagine 5 years ago having a conversation, you know, on like YouTube and Kick and stuff about an all white community. It just shows you how there has been, you know, and we, our ideology isn't exactly the same, but I really respect your ideology and it's close to mine. So I can look at you as like an ally and you're a likable guy. So you're not someone I would ever attack unless you did something really bad. So it's like, you just, these conversations have changed so much though. I wouldn't have seen this 5 years ago, I don't think.
Yeah, and a lot of it is the discourse, you know, between all of these actors. It's not just that one person got out there and promulgated the right message and that changed the game. It's like we opened a conversation that included millions of people, and now like my mother-in-law is red-pilled on, you know, all sorts of issues that I'm surprised to hear. These are people who were complete normies, you know, 3 years ago, but we can't stop there, because once you get dominance in a certain field, if you just kind of rest on your laurels, it's going to metastasize and become toxic. It's like any government past a certain size, past a certain level of power, becomes tyrannical. It starts like eating itself. And we have to not do that as a media ecosystem and start transcending. Not everyone will, right? Not everyone listening to this even knows what I'm talking about right now, but it does look like building new systems, new organizations that are going to be relatively small at first, right? And it's going to be a small class of relatively intelligent, relatively high agency people who see that, okay, we have to go beyond and do like a next level of this and build something that no one's built before. And the real cutting edge of that is you do find the solution that no one was even expecting. Like this one guy in particular presented an idea to me. I get a lot of DMs from people with ideas for projects, and I totally encourage that. Like, I want to link people up. I want to help people. So if you have some off the wall idea for a new social media thing or whatever it is, like, go ahead, DM me and I'll try to link you up with the right people. We have a business networking group as well. DM me to see if you can join that for entrepreneurs who like, oh, here's this new business model. Here's this new technology. There was one that we were considering recently. But anyway, this one guy in particular had a crowdfunded, we're going to talk to him on the podcast coming up this week. So tune into the RTL podcast to learn more about what I'm going to talk about now. But it's a crowdfunded citizen journalism network using crypto technology, where effectively, like, if you're in a race or you're sponsoring someone in a race, you put in a certain amount of money, and in a distributed way, a whole bunch of people are given the tools to be able to do all the necessary technical things like FOIA requests, getting the information from where currently the public doesn't have access to it. All of those steps are tedious and people don't like actually doing it. That's why Massey is rare, because actually going through the procedure is tedious and kind of boring. And like, he's an engineer, he can do it. But the ideological big talk people don't do stuff like that. This is a technical solution that, if it's as good as it sounds like, is going to end up filtering the right information to the right voters to actually affect outcomes of elections in an outsized way. It's like, I never would have thought of that probably, but there's some high IQ genius who felt comfortable going out of the box. So we need to reward that kind of behavior. But really, it's like, we can't just celebrate genius. You have to recognize that those geniuses who are going to come up with the answers that save us at some level come from the people. And you can't really legislate or regulate just the top 1%. It's not all about the elites. The elite theorist mentality is right in some respects, in that elite actors have an outsized influence on how government turns out. Mm-hmm. But at a policy level, it's like, how are you going to structure your society? You don't structure society around the 1%. Mm-hmm. You structure it around the average person and how the average person can thrive. Because if the plant is healthy, the fruit will be healthy, right? Yeah. You can't just focus on making a healthy fruit at the expense of the plant, right? So it's like, I'm saying we need these new radical solutions from these genius types, but the way to build to that and to foster more of those personality types is only from the bottom up, and it is only doing like what the Jews do and building that strong sense of culture, solidarity, and enforcing moral norms and helping to raise the next generation.
That's why they send them to Israel for free, because they want to get them to get that attachment to Israel. So it's smart they do that. And I fully agree. Yep. We do need to start, you know, getting some pride, getting all that. Off subject, I want to just go real quick before we wrap up, then we can circle back to the Returns of the Land before we finish. But so I just want your thoughts on Chud the Builder. I didn't really know anything. I heard the guy's name, but I didn't really know anything about him. And it seemed like he was smeared pretty bad by the media, because my first impression was like, total idiot. And I still don't. I still don't condone everything he does, but it seems like the story, like most things, were slanted. And even I fell for it, where I should know, always watch people yourself instead of believing what the media says. What's your thoughts on that guy?
Yeah, I wasn't like a huge Chud fan before this happened, where he shot the guy in self-defense, I believe. But I do recognize what he was doing. It's a very... it takes a lot of courage to do that kind of content, to go out there on the street, expose yourself to serious risk. And so can you cherry pick some clips of Chud where he does kind of come off like an idiot, just being a racist for no reason and antagonizing people? Yeah, you can. But I think the point of his message is, like, we are prohibited from simply speaking our mind because we're afraid of the reaction of these particular groups, especially Black Americans, right?
He was right. He proved us right.
Yes, absolutely he's right. And like, that taboo has to be broken if we're going to have genuine freedom of speech. We can't have white Americans curtailing what they're willing to say to appease a group that systematically has violent reactions and dramatic reactions to simple words.
Yeah, like, no one else does.
It's not
no
to disrespect the Black community to say this, but you shouldn't feel entitled to kill someone or beat someone because they say a particular word that you yourself say all the time.
That's a good point. They say it all the time themselves, but they flip out if you do. And to me, you know, like, even if he had, I think my initial story, I believe, was totally false. I thought he walked up to some guy, called him the N-word, and then got attacked and then pulled out a gun and shot him. I'm like, okay, that's kind of weak if you're going to go out and start a fight. But that wasn't even what happened. This guy was chasing him down the street. He was looking for him. Then he told him not to attack. Then he shot him. And he's being held, what was it, $1.25 million bond, which is just outrageous. Yeah. Someone brought up cases of, like, Black murderers, like 200,000. One was like 12,000, ridiculous. And then they won't even let him use his give send go money to bail himself out. I think it's just outrageous. It shows there's a clear difference between how white people and Black people are treated. It's like saying the N-word they're saying is worse than murder.
I mean, by implication, yeah, they are saying that. I forget who it was involved in the case, but someone overseeing this says effectively that, like, Chud abused his free speech privileges and brought this on himself. Free speech is not a privilege. It's a fundamental, unalienable right, God-given right. Mm-hmm. And, like, the fact that someone overseeing this case would feel comfortable using that language, calling free speech a privilege, shows that Chud was right to go to extreme lengths to go out and defend our right for free speech.
It did kind of prove him right. Exactly. Like, I don't recommend doing what he did, but he did kind of prove the whole point he was trying to make.
Yes. Yeah. No, it's a new breed of, I guess, unfortunately, we're still like content creators, but it's a new breed of activist, I guess, that is willing to face the consequences. The left has had this to their credit for a long time. Like, they're the people who would chain themselves to the tree to make sure it doesn't get cut down. They'll throw paint on these masterpieces, which, yeah, they're very misguided, and it's stupid that they would do that and immoral that they would do that at one level. On another level, they were willing to put themselves at risk and be willing to go to jail in order to advance their cause. Chud the Builder is someone, he effectively lost everything, his job, his family, because I think initially he used the N-word in some encounter where he's being antagonized in traffic. And then the person, like, tracked him down, doxed him, tried to get him fired successfully. And too many white people have gone through this, where some chance encounter where it's like, yeah, an antagonistic Black person, they end up using language maybe they shouldn't have, but whatever. It's a word. You can say what you want in this country. And then because of that one isolated instance, their whole life is destroyed. So this guy lost everything. And he decides, like, I'm going to stand up for our rights because it's the right thing to do. And I'm going to put myself at risk and either die doing this or possibly have to kill someone else in self-defense. So he had a lot of foresight. This was calculated. This isn't just some low IQ moron racist wanting to cause trouble. He was principled. That's a real activist, actually.
Yeah. No, it was my initial impression of him was the opposite, that he was, because I saw a couple of his worst clips, what I was told. But the more I looked into it, it was like, oh, I was kind of saw the version they gave me. And it works to hold this bond. That's just such an outrageous bond. They're trying to give him 60 years for self-defense. Didn't even kill the guy. 60 years for saying the N-word. And then Gypsy Crusader, if you don't know him, he actually became a friend of mine, kind of surprisingly. You know, I met him. He's extremely extreme online too, but he's one of like the most genuine, cool guys. He actually talked to his sponsor. Again, it's not a good sponsor, a gambling sponsor, which I had a gambling sponsor for a minute. I dropped it because I understand gambling is not good. They do pay well, though. They can pay so well because that shows how much money people are losing. That's when I had that realization. But anyways, you got a gambling sponsor, talks him into paying the bond. Then they said, no, someone has to put up like the whole million. Goes back, talked him into putting up the whole money. And I don't even know if they're allowing him to use that now. Like, how are they going to not let him use the bond?
Right. From both sources, it is ridiculous. I think they lowered it to 1 million from 1.25 million. So, but no, it's obviously a double standard, and something is being applied to him in particular, not just because he's white in this case, because he's white too, but because he is standing up for the right of white people to speak their mind against this system that wants to crush us and suppress us and basically have us cowering and, you know, I don't want to offend anyone. And like, that's growing up in California, that is absolutely the vibe that existed in the 1990s. Just absolute fear of saying the wrong thing, of offending the wrong person. And like, we're all sick of it. And Chud was a breath of fresh air. That's why he's gotten so much support. That's why he actually deserves the support. In legal terms, will this case set precedent? It definitely could. Chud's case could be important for self-defense law, not so much free speech itself, but what constitutes antagonizing someone to bring on. Because there is precedent to that effect where, like, it's a fighting words thing. Like, if you use words that are so strong and so evocative and you're basically directly threatening force and then they have the first strike, well, then you still antagonize them. It's not necessarily considered assault. But in this case, this isn't something he said then and there. Yeah. There are things he said in the past that now they're trying to apply and say, well, this black guy was really pissed off because of things he said online months ago.
Ridiculous. No, that makes it a lot different for me. I think to me, that changes it. I think if you walk up and call a guy that, and you should be expecting a fight. But if he said that in a stream and the guy was looking for him, that totally changes the whole dynamic. At least in my mind, it does.
Right. As far as I understand the precedent, he should absolutely walk. This should not apply. It is clear cut self-defense. But if he loses, that's a horrible precedent to set, because then you are saying that, like, any random black person, if you've ever used the N-word online, any random black person now, like, it's open season on you and they can attack you whenever they want. And they can just point and say, well, look, in this YouTube video 5 years ago, he used the N-word.
He said the N-word.
It's a dangerous precedent.
I think that's how Gypsy Crusader got so radicalized. He was attacked by Antifa in New York, and he ended up going to jail instead of them. And when he got out, I forget what it was, he went back to jail, but it was more, they made up some excuses, but it was more for like the words he said. So they became more radicalized. His mom died while he was in jail. He's about to get out. They wouldn't let him go see her. So he got out. He got radicalized. I'm surprised I didn't realize how famous he was until I hung out with him. People recognized him everywhere, but I think he wasn't trying to get famous. I think he was this way of dealing with like the trauma he'd been through, you know, when the character was going online harassing people, and he became like a superstar. I think people are just fed up with the BS. So it shows you the fact that there's like, that this guy Chud apparently is pretty big too, that they became big doing this shows people are fed up. And I don't know where it's going to go, but at least for where we're at.
It can go in one of two directions. Either you keep going where you see the feedback on social media. Oh, this does good numbers. Therefore, I'm going to go out on the street and start saying the N-word or whatever.
Yeah,
encourage that sort of thing. And then that'll just get more extreme until there are serious problems. And I hope that people are sophisticated enough not to just like repeat the same thing. Like, hey, this button produces this result.
Yeah.
I'm going to press it a million times. And that's the dangerous thinking that like, it's very important we don't do that. On the other hand, what it signals is that people want to be engaged and people want to have a direct role in changing the culture. And they don't want to be passive observers anymore. We have to provide outlets though for that other than wandering around in public using profanity. And I think that Chud would agree with that too. I don't think he sees what he's doing as like, this is the solution that we all need to be doing is wandering around, city
sidewalks. We don't need a million Chuds, but I think what he was doing, like you said, once I actually watched some of his content, I'm like, okay, this is not the guy I thought he was at all. He was polite to lots of black people, respectful.
Right. So these cases are related. It's like what he is trying to do is cut the shackles and embolden white people especially, but really all people, to speak their mind and speak the truth, and don't put on kid gloves with certain demographics and basically like kowtow to the most, like the squeaky wheel gets the grease kind of thing. Let's not just try to appease this one group because we're afraid of the consequences. Like that is really, really important. And going out there in public and making a difference like that, it's also really important that signaling people want to be engaged. Now, to get engaged, we need to organize. And that's the RTTL lawsuit, is we simply organized a neighborhood and they're trying to shut that down. So if you can't peacefully organize a neighborhood, what are you going to be allowed to do for your own good? What will you be allowed to say in your own private community, in your own discourse? Are they going to try to have thought control on Gab? Are they going to try to impose these restraints already in churches? You know, like if you're a 501c3 exempt, tax exempt organization as a church, the government has some level of oversight in what your pastor actually can say. They can revoke that status if it ends up being discriminatory or, you know, against this or that. So, I mean, again, going back to the Massey thing, it's all connected. Like, we cannot allow government to come in and tell us what we can say, what we can think, how we can live, where we can live, what we can do with our own land. It's enough. We don't need them to build a good society. In fact, everything good about American society was built in the private sector, right? Yeah. Like, our schools, our communities, it was founded by pioneers who went out and just built. That is, like, as someone who's obviously pro-white, obviously I like things about the white race. And one of those things is you can drop us anywhere in the world and we will produce a certain quality of society. We will produce civilization. And so we don't need the government to impose our ideology or have like a white nationalist government and that's the only way to get what we want. Actually, we have everything we need if we're simply allowed to say what we believe, organize how we please, and do what we want on our own private land. And I think these cases all go together. The election goes together. And I think the path forward is relatively clear to me. At a public level, hold this actual villainous elite accountable. Have them stop stealing our money through excessive taxation, et cetera. And, you know, the pedophile networks, the blackmail networks, put an end to it. Punish the criminals. Okay, stop their oversight. They treat us like criminals when they are demonstrably the criminal.
Treat us like the criminals. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So get them off our back, and then privately, private sector, let's actually organize. Let's actually build a discourse, an intellectual discourse that works. Like my original inspiration before Return to the Land, before Peter's framework, was we need our own academies. They infiltrated the universities decades ago. Right. And they have very, very tight control. A lot of professors are Jewish. A lot, even more, are communists. Right. And they're pushing this hyper left wing ideology in all of these universities. And now new generations are going through being indoctrinated by it. The other consequence, though, of them controlling the universities is the actual research that pushes the ball forward, where new technology comes from. That's all in their hands. Right. Whereas we, again, I am a white man. I'm a pro-white man. I do recognize certain good things about us. It is the fact that white men as a demographic have the highest IQ people in the world. Always we do, because we have the highest standard deviation. compared to East Asians. They have a higher average IQ, but we have a wider spread. We have a lot of morons and then a lot of really, really intelligent people. We also have that personality type. Just look at the accomplishments historically. More patents per capita, more inventions, more scientific discoveries. That's not going away. We're still that people, right? And so if we don't control our own universities, we don't control our own research, we're not going to be the ones to get those new technologies that really push us forward. Why did America thrive? Because we were innovative. Why did Europe thrive? Because they invented new things. They discovered new things. We can still do that. And I think ultimately that is our like hidden weapon that no one can take away. We're the innovative, creative, boundary shattering race of people that will build the new thing that everyone else will probably end up adopting. That's just who we are. So we don't need to control government to do that. We need them to stop interfering, give us freedom, build our own communities up, and foster and sponsor the handful of people who are creative and who come up with the new things, celebrate that, and then reap the fruits of that. And then total victory, that's where we actually see tangible results in the real world, and our children are you know, better off for it. Our communities look better for it. So that's just laying all my my cards on the table right now. This is the future I see. Get government off our back, and in the private sector, flourish, build communities, raise up the right values in our kids, and it goes beyond that. And then what can we create? And I think that's what they, quote unquote, are really afraid of. Is what we can create when we are left to our own devices.
We've seen how we've thrived in the past. So you mostly just want to be left alone, it sounds like, for the most part. Obviously, I'm sure you want some control of the government, like deporting some people, but I've never heard you push any hatred towards other races. I don't think you're a hateful guy. You just want your ability to have your own communities. And I think white people have been attacked so much. It's kind of one of our lower points. We're not thriving like we have in the past.
Right. Yeah, it's like, I don't think we need the government to impose white supremacist policies in order for white Americans to really, really thrive and go beyond where we've ever been before. It's like white Americans were the most successful group in the world economically in terms of innovation by a wide margin, right? Because it was a certain type of person that came here, and we can be that again. We can actually go beyond where we left off and be in, like, RTTL is international. This is an organization founded in America. We're coming up with solutions for white people all around the world. We're going to have this kind of international white American presence at a certain point in time if we play our cards right. It's not like you have to think like the Jews, all right? They think internationally. They think about, you know, what is the world going to look like in decades and centuries?
They look down like their children and children's children. We don't do that. I realized that one day. I'm like, wow, they're looking like 100 years, 200 years ahead. So
It's not about this government in DC. That's a small part of the picture. What we are as Americans is so much bigger than that. There was an ethnogenesis. It was a new people that was born. And it's not just some random people. I mean, look on the map. Look at America. We're surrounded by these giant oceans. You had to cross oceans and like settle a frontier to even be here. And so if we can simply secure our liberty and organize ourselves, we can have thriving communities all around the world that are organized for us and which enhance our education, our health, that apply all the things health that like important. National socialists want to do with government. They want to impose these things. Like, we don't need the government to do those things. Actually, if we build our own communities and a network of communities around the world, we can do better than government. We can organize more intelligently. We can use new technologies because the old government
get in our way. So we want them to get away. I think like two more questions and we can wrap.
Sure.
So, okay. Are you hopeful? Because I go back and forth. Some days I'm hopeful, some days feeling like black-pilled, like it's all hopeless. Like, what are your thoughts?
I'm very hopeful. And yet the majority of white people are not going to make it. The majority of I'm like very optimistic and pessimistic in that I do expect a significant economic crisis in the relatively near future. I think the rest of the 2020s are going to be rough. I don't see some kind of imminent recovery and we're going to have a new like stock market peak. We did, though, ironically, it's because of all the manipulation. It's like the wealthy people with all of their money and equity funds, hedge funds, like they are doing well. But average people, we're going to see costs rise. We're going to see instability increase. However, that is a selective pressure. That's going to force people to organize. That's going to select for certain people who, yeah, they're just not going to make it. They probably shouldn't have made it this far, not to be so ruthless with it. But like, you've heard of this theory about like the dysgenic selection of industrial society. People like Ed Dutton talk about it, where effectively, like in the past, a lot of things were selected against because people had to survive. They had to provide for themselves. Now we have welfare. Now we have all of these technologies, and a lot of people who wouldn't have made it in the past, they're walking around today. Okay, and God bless them. We love everybody, especially our own people. But as things get harsher, it's going to breed a new type of person. And a lot of the people who were weak because there weren't strong selective pressures against it, and who have a lot of mutational load, so a lot of like their DNA, even all of these things that shouldn't be there are there. That's the actual state of the population. And you can see it. Like, look at pictures from the 1910s, right? And like, everybody is well proportioned, lean. They look different than people today. So like, it kind of has to happen. And it sucks to have to live through that period. I think that's what we're coming up on. But the upside is we are already organizing while it's relatively easy now. We have more information than we ever have. Organizational science, and we're not, you know, just operating on the basis of a hunch. It's like the tools to build the right kind of government, the right kind of organization, are widely available now. They're more advanced than ever before. The group or groups that makes it through the coming transition and which organize to form something new, I think will be the strongest societies, the most beautiful societies, like the most accomplished societies the world has ever seen. So in that sense, I'm entirely white-pilled. I think that groups like Return to the Land, whether we win this case or not, whatever the precedent is, we'll find a way to organize around it or despite it. Hopefully we win and it becomes easier. Obviously, I want to see that. But like, if the current generation of people willing to organize, willing to work together succeeds in doing that, I think there's going to be no stopping us. Just like, again, look at what the Jews did. They were a diaspora people, expelled from their homeland. They had these small communities all around the world, but they ended up seeing eugenic selection in Europe because of the occupations that were available to them. Like, with the right selective pressures, with the right solidarity, with the right programming, like they have their Bible, we have to solve a lot of those problems because, you know, RGTL, for example, is Christian and pagan, right? European pagan. So like that, what is it that we are, that we fall back on? It's not as easy as it was for the Jews. Yeah. However, I see their example, and I see that if we get all of these ingredients right, then it's within our power to secure a future for our kids and our community. And ultimately, that's what matters. Like, the fate of the world broadly is less important than what you can affect. Like, your world is what you can reach out and touch. You don't interact with most Americans. Most policy doesn't directly affect you, but where you live, how you live, how you educate your kids, that stuff really matters. And all of that I'm incredibly optimistic about, because we do have more tools now than ever before. And I think a sense, there's a rising sense of who we are that I think is deepening and growing more profound. I don't know what that looks like exactly when it's mature, but I'm looking forward to it for sure.
Yeah, I think we're going to go through some interesting times, and I'm not sure where they're going to go. Like, I think you're right. There'll probably be a tough time, but I think we can bounce out of it. You mentioned the paganism. I want to talk about that before we wrap. I've been so intrigued. I've met so many pagans through these pro-white groups. And there's people that are super anti-Christianity, like Adam Green, which he's kind of irritating. He takes it so over the top. But I'm glad you guys were able to live together in peace as Christians.
I'm still reading his book. He lent me his book. It's not bad. I disagree with a lot of his arguments, but the evidence he brings to the – like, I believe this guy believes what he's saying. And like, yeah, as long as he's just sincere, comes across
kind of arrogant and aggressive, which is unnecessary. Well, it's like, why would you hate your Christians if you, even if you disagree with them, you're taking the wrong approach. That's kind of been my thought with them. Just be like, hey, yeah, why don't you just tell them, like, isn't there a better way that we can coexist? And I'm glad you guys are coexisting. Like, what do you think is causing this massive pagan rise in the pro-white groups? Is it like the original white religions, or what do you think that is?
Yeah, I think we have more information about pagan practices now than ever before. The same thing happened in the late 1800s. There was a renaissance of pagan imagery, not so much pagan religious practice, but because of the scholarship that happened in the mid-1800s, this is the context where Wagner was inspired to write things like The Ring Cycle, right? And that was the fashion in elite circles. Everyone was enthused about it. So now we have all of this genetic information about population movements in the ancient world and where our ancestors actually came from, combined with linguistic evidence and comparative mythology evidence, where we have a pretty robust picture. And a lot of that was so murky in the past, like no one even knew what the Celts believed. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a subject of interest for me, is the Celtic religion. A lot of people go for Nordic paganism because there's a huge amount of research now that's been done on it. But realistically, like, I'm primarily Germanic with some Celtic admixture, but like the Celts were the advanced civilization. The Germans were kind of the barbarians on the periphery to Rome, but also to the Celtic civilization. And so a lot of the more sophisticated things in the German pagan world, I think they were probably cribbing from Celtic metaphysics and Celtic theology. And I'd really like to learn more about that, but more information is coming out. There's that YouTuber Fortress of Lug. You ever seen him?
Fortress, I'll look him up because I'm curious about all this stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if it's pronounced Lug or Lou, but it's L-U-G-H, I think. His stuff is amazing. And the way, you know, I don't necessarily agree with all of it or have the subject matter expertise to even evaluate a lot of it. But yeah, I mean, there's just this wealth of information of what our ancestors actually thought. Now, the Adam Green side of things and the critique of Christianity, I do understand because I share a lot of those criticisms. Mm-hmm. I do think it has been used as a vehicle to basically make white Europeans subservient to a Jewish agenda.
Christian Zionism. Yeah, that's a huge problem. I'm not going to not deny that.
It is. Yeah, yeah. And the seeds for that, I think, go back really, really deep. My position is like a kind of Gnostic, Marcionite type position, yeah, where Jesus came to basically undo this unwholesome legalistic, yeah, religion of the Jews and bring some of them and then also Gentiles into a better kind of more perennial wisdom tradition like you would see in Plato or in Hinduism. So I think he was more like converting Jews away from this heresy,
yeah,
against philosophy and tradition, capital T tradition. But, you know, Adam Green thinks that the whole thing was a conspiracy. Yeah, I think there's not evidence. You can go either way. I think the evidence is vague enough that you can believe Jesus existed and he was a wholesome teacher and he was against actually most of Judaism. There's enough evidence where you can believe he was totally in line with Judaism, like, yeah, the Judaizers thought. Or you can believe, I mean, it's just, we don't know that much about it. Yeah, and the way I look at it, that gives us freedom, where we're not really tied down by hard facts which determine which of these paths we have to take. For me, I would much rather harmonize Christianity with Hellenistic philosophy, yeah, with Hindu philosophy, which I also studied and really admire, also created by European people, not like subcontinental Indians in ancient times. So I would rather harmonize it, synthesize it, and kind of reconcile the Christian and pagan sides of things. I would love, yeah, to see that. And my, same, stance is like, we don't really know the full story. So rather than acting like we know and taking these firm stances and having dogmas about it, like, let's just continue researching our common past and learn like what they thought about God and the gods and all of these things. But that just goes back to education. So I'm really not like a dogmatist or like, I don't take my religious convictions that seriously because I know that I could be wrong. I lean Gnostic with Christianity, but I'm reading Adam's book, all right, which I would even recommend, like, considering the argument.
I've had him on as a guest, but, like, we fight sometimes. But I just interviewed a guest on Gnostic Christianity with all, like, the lost Gnostic texts that weren't put in there, and it was so fascinating, like, all this stuff that, like, Jesus coming down from the sky, not so then he's not Jewish, and, like, the God explains why Yahweh, that was, like, the Jewish God, the God that wasn't good. It made sense of how he could smash babies' heads on the ground. I thought, it's like, wow, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, that is my current stance. I wouldn't call myself a Gnostic. In my view, the Gnostic sects were all influenced by Hellenistic philosophy, especially Platonism. First and foremost, I am a Platonist. Mm-hmm. I kind of look, you said I was willing to step down. Like, I look forward to the day where all these lawsuits are over. I can just, that someone else takes over and I can go back to making videos on Platonism for like 2,000 people on YouTube. That's really where I belong. That's where I want to be. But the Gnostics were highly influenced by the Platonists, the Hermeticists, which is another strain of Western esoteric teaching. Yeah, they were influenced by the Platonists. And so I tend to just go back to the most ancient source, if possible, which is why I went for the Upanishads, where a lot of this philosophy really came out. And then Plato's works, which is where a lot of it also comes from. And I'm open to more, but yeah, I wouldn't necessarily call myself a hardline Gnostic, because the Gnostics also believed a bunch of different things. It wasn't like one systematic philosophy per se.
Exactly. No, it's very complex, but like I said, I was fascinated, just got into it last week. What was that guy's name, Ron, that interviewed? Yeah, Lidwa. So if guys want to check that out, where can people find you? Anything you want to add before we wrap up? And thanks for coming on again.
Yeah, of course, Jake. Glad to be here. On X, it's at @ARVOLL_ Again, if you want to help out with the legal fundraiser, I think it's going to be a case that sets significant precedent. Support Chud, support RTTL. We need to win these legal battles. The opposition, let's say, puts millions of dollars into attacking us with Lawfare. We have to start fighting back and organizing. So that is givesendgo.com/RTTL-legal-fees. Our website is returntotheland.org. You know, not everyone would necessarily qualify, but if you could qualify, consider applying. We have meetups all over the country, and, you know, we're trying to build something. We're trying to create opportunities for people. Mm-hmm. You know, the business networking is really exciting too. There are a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of people with resources, investors. So if you have business ideas and you want a receptive audience, consider joining that. I'm always reading my DMs. I respond to basically everybody. Unless you're like being mean and calling me names, then I won't respond to you. But yeah, I mean, we don't do enough networking. So if you're going to start networking, go ahead and start doing it with RTTL and our business network and all that stuff. Glad to help. Also, you know, I highly recommend Patriot Front as another vetted organization. Or for that matter, like, consider attending AMRIN. It happens every year in the fall in Tennessee.
What is it called?
AMRIN, American Renaissance.
I'll look that up. Maybe I'll go check that out.
Jared Taylor, it's his conference.
Okay, I know that is, yeah.
Yeah, you should go. Yeah, hopefully I'll see you there.
Yeah, that might be interesting. I think it's like we in like Twitter and stuff, you see people that 90 or 95% agree fighting amongst each other. So for the most part, maybe it's better to try not to attack people that are 90% on your side, you know?
Right. Ideological purity is not going to save us here. It's like working together and winning necessary battles is actually going to save us. And you don't have to totally agree with someone to do that. So, and I'm very willing to put water under the bridge and reach reconciliation with people if we've had problems in the past. Like there was one guy I kind of inadvertently fed jacketed way back in the day. This guy, Mike from Imperium Press, by the way, Imperium Press puts out great books, but I thought it was a fed op. Cause I was being schizo in like 2019. And then like recently I had him back on and we, you know, I'm glad to work with him again. So just because you had some big falling out doesn't mean you can't get back together. And, you know, a year ago, our whole movement was in a really positive place and it was looking up. Now there's been some selection. Maybe this is like a wheat from the chaff kind of issue that we're seeing now, but I'm still optimistic. Cause I think the people who are still in it, who want to organize, we have better chances now and the ball is rolling now. So get involved, RTTL, go to AMREN, join Patriot Front. There's so many ways to be involved without even, you know, breaking the law or doing something risky like what Chud did. We don't all have to be Chud, but there are
I don't recommend doing that, but I'm still going to, you know, I actually haven't donated any money. I should donate some money, or actually can't even use it, but I should do something to help him. Because even though I don't think he should do what he was doing, he was actually fighting. He proved his point.
Right.
With the bell.
For us. Right. Mm-hmm. And we can all get in the fight in some capacity, but definitely
exactly.
that's my message now is like, find that sense of duty, realize like your kid's future is on the line now, and you don't want to be 40, 50, 60 years old, looking back on your life, looking at the country, thinking, man, could I have been more involved? Could I have done something to make a difference? Well, you don't have to run into that situation. Get involved now.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Hey, thanks a lot.
Awesome. All right.